Welcome back. I am Jim Rome. We start hour number two, and the jungle is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Coming up next hour, newly retired 9-year NFL linebacker Derek Morgan joins us. We spent the entire first hour talking about the Open Championship. Rex in Albuquerque came in, got himself run like always. He's doing a little lap around Twitter, taking high fives from three or four other dopes who think he's funny. I'll reset that for you. Tiger might be having a worse day than Rory. Rory had a horrible day. Change up. Talk some NFL right now. We are joined by a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo, co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. I'm speaking of Charles Robinson. My man, Charles, what's going on? How are you?
Doing well, Jim. We're back in it.
We are back in it. In fact, I was going to start right there. Camps are opening up. Players are showing up. What is this time of year like for you?
Busy. I'm going to be on the road. I'm actually in L.A. We're doing some studio shoots with some players right now who are all kind of fitting in their last-minute advertising obligations, and then hit the road for Cardinals camp on the 25th. But, yeah, I'll be on the road for a month solid, so it's always exciting. Everybody's, you know, the positive storylines, the holdouts, you know, everybody wants to see how the young quarterbacks look. So I'm ready to go. It's been a long off season.
You are in it. Let's break some of that down. Why don't we start with the Browns, where there is so much buzz right now? You made the point that when you watched Baker Mayfield last year, the entire Browns team looked at him and said, that's our guy, that's our leader. You've been around that league a long time. How many times have you seen a team do that with a rookie quarterback?
It's rare. It was mind-boggling because, I think people don't understand when these guys, whether you're the first pick or, you know, if you're a first-round quarterback, none of that really matters because you can be a 22, 23-year-old guy, 21-year-old guy. If you're walking in and you're the starter, you have grown men with families, with obligations, with all these things, guys who know the league. They know the cutthroat mentality, and now all of a sudden – you have to lead them. You have to stand in that locker room and be the guy. And more often than not, rookie quarterbacks who get thrust into that situation, like, say, like a Lamar Jackson, you know, they dial it back a little bit. Josh Allen was a guy who I think with the Buffalo Bills, he was dialed back a little bit. He was sort of like, hey, I'm going to go out there, do my thing, lead by example. Baker was like, I'm going to go out there and do my thing, but I'm going to talk, too, and I'm going to push guys to be better, and I'm going to say this is what we need to be. And when Jackson obviously was fired and joined the Bengals, Baker was like one of the first guys to step up in that Browns locker room and go, yo, that's not right. Like, this guy just flipped on us. He just went to the other team in our state. This guy is now our enemy. To me, it was just wild to see a guy. And, you know, I kind of made the comparison to Draymond Green. You see some of these guys in pro sports where coaches get their hands on a guy who comes in the locker room and suddenly places more expectations on the players than even a coach has to, may even coach players harder than a coach does. And, yeah, I mean, he was just one of those guys where it was miraculous the way that they immediately all gravitated toward him. And, you know, now you hear stars on other teams who look at Baker Mayfield and would like to play with him. And I think Odell, that was one of the big reasons why he didn't throw a bigger fit about the trade to Cleveland. Not only is he going to play with Jarvis Landry, but he has a relationship with Baker, and he believes in Baker, and Odell might be, honestly, the most talented player in pro football right now.
Charles Robinson joining us. Man, that is such a great response. There is so much to unpack in that, and Baker's got Odell's back. I can't get enough of the guy. I mean, I absolutely love Baker Mayfield. I cannot get enough of him. I think they are America's team. I think he is America's quarterback. And the point that you made that Baker – not only is he all in and not afraid and is going to speak his mind, he gets pissed off when guys don't do their job. So from a coach's standpoint, how much does that fire up a coach when he sees a quarterback, much less a young quarterback, is coaching his guys as hard or even harder than the head coach himself?
Oh, I think I think Freddie Kitchens is psyched. I mean, and I think that's part of why Freddie Kitchens has that job is just because he and Baker, when Freddie Kitchens was the quarterback's coach and Todd Haley was the OC, Baker really formed his strongest bond with Freddie Kitchens first. And I think what Baker really gravitated toward with Freddie Kitchens and a big reason why Freddie Kitchens ended up getting that job, the team knows that Baker is the centerpiece. They know that he is, even with Myles Garrett on the roster, even with Odell Beckham, this is their leader. This is their emotional compass. He's got the map. And, I think Baker always felt like Freddie Kitchens let Baker be himself, whereas interestingly enough, that what I always heard was Todd Haley was hard on Baker, did not want Baker speaking out, didn't want Baker trying to take a more authoritative, like, leadership role. And Freddie Kitchens was just like, look, man, be yourself. Be, you know, talk. Say what you got to say. Push guys. And, you know, clearly I think that brought out a lot of, you know, the best parts of Baker. And to me, what's remarkable about him is sometimes guys come out and they do this and you think it's an act. You're like, okay, they're really, they know they should be like this, so they sell it. He's legit. Like, he is legitimately upset, pushing guys. If he feels like you're not on board with him and the Browns, it's like with the Duke Johnson negotiations. He might have spoke out, and the coaching staff, guys like Freddie Kitchens, might have been like, yeah, don't talk about other guys' deals. But behind the scenes, they're like, but he's right. He said the right thing. Get on board with us.
Hey, listen, I can't get enough. I could do this for an hour alone, but let me hit you up with another topic or two. Charles Robinson joining us. The way Antonio Brown left Pittsburgh, it would be very easy for people to say, good, man, good, beat it, good riddance. They'll be better off without him. But when you take a step back and you take the emotion out of it, how big of a loss is that for the Pittsburgh offense?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Everyone's like, well, addition by subtraction. I'm like, I don't know, man. This might be subtraction by subtraction. Like, for all, I get it. I understand he was a pain to deal with. I've been in their camp for years. I mean, he was a guy that I can always remember in the preseason. You know, he would play a lot to the crowds in the preseason. You'd see guys on defense kind of rolling their eyes about, you know, he'd score a touchdown and kind of put it in the defense's face. And, like, there were clearly guys in that locker room that felt like he had those diva qualities and it rubbed them the wrong way. But you know what? They put up with it for years because the guy was an automatic to go out and catch 100, 120 balls. He might have been greedy about his catches, but he produced. And when you have an automatic cog in that offense, who really is such a perfectionist about what he does when he gets on the field, and you remove him, I'm sorry, there's going to be a void. And the Steelers and the fans, they're kidding themselves that they just think, well, getting the attitude out is all that really mattered. No, now you have to replace really what's going to be 120 catches and a technician on that team who younger guys did look at. Look, Juju Smith-Schuster, I mean, I know they had their falling out, but the truth is Juju looked at Antonio and learned a lot of things before Antonio went out the door about being a pro. So that's another thing that you take off the roster. I get losing the drama, and that's understandable, but you hit it on the head, man. There's a void when you lose an elite-level receiver, and that's what he is. It changes some of the dynamic of that offense. That's what makes this camp so important.
And let's give Mr. Big Chest credit, too, for working. Man, this guy works. He's got an unbelievable work ethic. So he's gone. Le'Veon Bell is gone. But, Charles, when you talk to people around the league, how big of a loss is the loss of offensive line coach Mike Munchak?
Massive. Massive. Like, I think what was interesting to me was Munchak, I think the last two seasons when you talk to guys about who's the best assistant in the NFL who's not a coordinator, and you talk about, you know, guys who could potentially make the leap to a head coaching job from an assistant coach role, Munchak was the name that came up. They're like, look, he's got the head coach mentality. He's an unbelievable, in terms of the film room organization, a technique teacher, a leader. Like, he was just that guy as an offensive line coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers, which is why he became a head coaching commodity from a skill position, assistant position, rather than a coordinator position. So for him to end up off that roster is a significant loss. I think personally, it's vastly overshadowed. We talk about Le'Veon, we talk about Antonio Brown not being there, but to me, Mike Munchak is the one guy who made that line go. Now, granted, They're a veteran group. They return all those guys. So thankfully you still have that presence, guys who already learned how to do it with Mike Munchak. But you can't afford to lose extra head coaches off your staff. And really the Pittsburgh Steelers definitely lost one.
Charles Robinson doing his thing, breaking it all down. All right, so what about Kansas City? They're coming off that huge year last year. They do not have Kareem Hunt. There's the ongoing situation with Tyreek Hill. How do you think Kansas City shows up this season?
Well, first off, you got to figure out running back. I mean, look, is it going to be Damien Williams? Like, you have to look at the depth there and figure out, is there going to be a guy who's going to rise up into that, you know, 1,000-yard rusher, 500-yard receiver? Like, running back, I think when you really broke it down after you lose Kareem Hunt, their offense did change. It struggled a little bit. It was a little less dynamic. So I think sorting out running backs is a big deal for them. But look, everybody just wants to know what's going on with Tyreek Hill. The longer tape comes out, we had the short tape, sounded really bad for Tyreek Hill. We get the full 11, 12-minute tape in the context. It still sounds bad, but, man, there was a lot there that was not initially reported when the first tape comes out. I think the Chiefs right now feel very cautiously optimistic that they're going to have Tyreek Hill for most of the season, if not all of the season, when this is all shaken out from the NFL standpoint. They're careful about saying that publicly because, look, they watched the Dallas Cowboys say it about Zeke, and then he got popped for six games. And so, you know, look, you just never really know when it's in the hands of Roger Goodell. But I think they know, look, the number one priority on this offense is going to know, are we going to have Tyreek Hill on the field 100%? And then beyond that, sorting out really what's going on with the running back situation. They feel great about Frank Clark, Tyrann Mathieu. They feel like that defense has got some edginess to them. To me, if that team doesn't make the Super Bowl out of the AFC, particularly if Tyreek Hill is there all season, something went wrong. That should be a Super Bowl team in Kansas City.
Charles Robinson joining us. We're talking NFL. You mentioned Zeke Elliott. Now, you know, there's been various reports about that situation with his contract. Remember, the Cowboys did play hardball with DeMarco Murray after he put up huge numbers and then left for Philadelphia. I'm not saying they're one and the same, but could you see them doing the same thing with Elliott, or does the deal eventually get done?
I mean, that's what Elliott's worried about, you know. I think he's looking at, he knows that this is a season where, top to bottom, the Cowboys have one of the best rosters in the NFL. Like, I think it's a Super Bowl-worthy roster. They might have the best two deep in the NFL or pretty darn close to it in terms of their depth. And Zeke knows I'm the anchor on offense. There are guys in personnel who will tell you privately, like, look, we love Dak. He's great. But we all know this is an offense that right now orbits. We'll see if it continues this way under Kellen Moore, but it orbits around Zeke. And, you know, so Zeke's sitting there going, look, I'm going to be a 25, you know, to 30 touch a game guy potentially this season. That's just how it's going to be. And I want that long-term security. Plus, I look at, as you said, DeMarco Murray, they wore him out and then just said, look, here's what DeMarco considered a low-ball offer. I think in Zeke Elliott's mind and in his camp's mind, there was a six-year plan for him with the Dallas Cowboys and then wave goodbye. We'll get you through the 5 years of your rookie deal. We'll franchise tag you once and pay you one time for one season. But by then, you'll have so many carries on you, we'll be good letting you go elsewhere like we did with DeMarco Murray. That's part of what's going on right now and him trying to figure out, is it time to put my foot in the sand and try to hold out right now to get that long-term security?
It's good info. Charles, one more topic I've got to ask you about. Golden Tate recently said that Matthew Stafford was the best quarterback he ever played with. Legend has it that there was a dinner a while back where an NFL head coach said, quote, Aaron Rodgers is great, sure, but Matthew Stafford is the bleeping natural, end quote. You were at that dinner. I know better than to ask you who the coach was, but what was your reaction to that comment?
Like I said, I think I tweeted about this. I definitely counted the number of wine bottles on the table at that point.
Right.
I was shocked, honestly, to hear this coach say it. And I know that, you know, we talked about it a little bit. It was a very prominent coach. It was someone who knows quarterbacks, who's touched guys who are absolutely Hall of Fame caliber guys. I was stunned to hear him say that. Yeah, I don't know. Look, Matthew Stafford, tough as nails, great quarterback. I just don't know. I don't know that anyone else at the table agreed, and I'm trying to think off the top of my head. There were four other head coaches, a general manager, an assistant general manager were at that table. I don't know that anybody really agreed, and there was definitely some scoffing from across the table about, like, hey, back it off, let's cut it off. They're waving the waitress away, no more bottles of wine.
Cut him off. Charles Robinson is a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo. He is the co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast in Los Angeles right now, about to hit the road for an entire month. My man, great job, Charles. Always good to have you on this show. Appreciate the input so much.
Anytime, Rome. Always my pleasure.
Good job, bud. Really well done. He is one of the best to do it. Charles Robinson. All right, then. It's interesting, right? Like, he's all in on Baker Mayfield. And said, you never see a young quarterback come in and get that kind of command of a huddle and a locker room and an organization, and that it's really rare. I had a conversation with Todd Furman, another guy, very intellectual guy, very, very sharp. Had a conversation with him for episode 89 of the Jim Rohn podcast, and I told him the same thing that I just said. They're America's team. They've got America's quarterback. They've got America's coach. I'm all about the Browns. He said, yeah, I wouldn't be if I were you. Jim. I would not be if I were you. So not everybody buys in. Not everybody's all in. C-Town, how you feeling about things? And then, of course, you have the reaction to Rex. Jeremy Lanza tweets, OMFG. Sexy, Rexy, in New Mexico, with lines like, greasy hot snakes.
Greasy hot snakes.
It's my favorite thing to hear on the Jim Rome Show. Hey, Lanza, there's no accounting for personal taste. Just know this from me to you. I did not get into this business to take telephone calls from guys talking about greasy hot snakes.
Greasy hot snakes.
It sort of pisses me off that that's your favorite thing about this show. I'm working pretty hard, Lanza. Johnson LA 1970 tweets, hey Jim, stop asking Rex to change. I don't want that cat to change. I just die laughing every time he calls. Keep doing you, Rex. Never change, my man. I didn't ask him to change. I asked him who and what he wants to be when he grows up. Hey, listen again. Rex does Rex, and there are three or four imbeciles on Twitter who think it's funny. Adam Carter tweets, greasy hot snakes
greasy
has
hot
me rolling.
Snakes.
Ray in Sherwood. Hey, Jim, Rex rules. I mean, suit yourselves. Personally, I'd rather have a conversation with Charles Robinson. Great intel. Good stuff. It's got my football juices going. I love it. Can't get enough of that. I could have talked to that guy for another hour. Easy. Easy. But some of you would rather just have me reset greasy hot snakes for the next hour. Luckily, most of the audience wants intelligent football talk, which is what I'm giving you. Imagine some head coach at a table with four other head coaches, some GMs, scouts, and sitting back and saying, I mean, you talk about a hot take nation. Imagine some head coach sitting back and saying, hey, let me tell you something. Matt Stafford, man, that right there is the natural. Dude, so much better than anybody doing it right now. So much better than anybody slinging it right now. So much better than Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, or anybody else. I mean, you got like some coach in Hot Take Nation just sitting back and saying, yeah, what do you think about that? I think you've had too much to drink, coach. That's what I think about that. Yeah, I like Stafford a lot. We know this guy can sling it. We know he's tough as hell. But come on, better than Aaron Rodgers? Stop.
That's unbelievable.
That is. When we come back, I want to talk some more about the Browns. I want to talk about a really bad guy. Look, there are more good people than bad people in this world, but there are some really bad guys in this world. And I've got one of them that I want to talk about. Enos Kanter had himself a day. That's one of the good dudes. One of the funny dudes. Derek Morgan, next hour. I do want to talk about that podcast with Todd Furman, too. Really interesting stuff. So, lots of really good content still ahead. Take a short time out and we'll come right back.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Come back. All right, somewhat short segment because we ran long on that last segment. Just keep that in mind. 1-800-636-8686. I had Todd Furman on the podcast, and because we talked gambling for the better part of 40 minutes, I can't lie. Got a little action going on the Open Championship. I was motivated. We talked Vegas. You know, you ever notice that when you talk to somebody about Vegas, all of a sudden you feel it in your blood, like you want to go to Vegas? I couldn't get to Vegas, but I got online, got a little action on the Open Championship. One of the guys that I got down with to win, it's a guy that Todd Furman actually was talking about, John Rahm. Now, I didn't need to hear it from Furman to think that that was a guy that I wanted to throw in with. But it certainly didn't hurt.
Everybody get down.
He is your first round leader right now. So we'll talk more about that. Let's go to the phones while we have the opportunity. Josh in Detroit. Josh feels like he's got an amazing game. No matter how many bad things happen to him on the program, no matter how many times he gets run, he still insists that he's got like crazy game. Golden ticket game. And that he blew out everybody's speakers last time with his amazing smack. There's something almost admirable about it. I mean, sure, it's pathetic, but there's something almost admirable about a guy having no game yet walking around like he's Babe Ruth. So let's see what happens. We go to the D. Josh in Detroit. What's up, Josh?
Hey, Romy. Thanks for the vine. Hats off to Elk and Hawk doing the jungle versus the open. But guess what, Rome? I took Rory McIlroy. So go figure, right? He's plus +8. You know, Rome, as soon as you said my name, people are jumping in the drink. My smack is so hot. SPF 100. Dermatology recommended suntan lotion won't help anybody. Rome, I see that you're playing some music for people that text and email and call. Well, there's only one song that you can play for me today, and Grandpa Joe sings it. I got a golden ticket.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that.
Actually,
call.
Josh, you're wrong.
Not a very good call.
I mean, you're right. There is a song for you, but it's not the song you think. It's a song by LT, LaDainian Tomlinson. You picked Rory McIlroy. Really? Why not just pick Hefty Mickelson? Yeah, Rory McIlroy was not the right pick, Josh. And your decision to call this show was not the right decision. Your smack is so hot that everybody's jumping in the lake over it. And then you went with some SPF 50 smack? Some dermatology recommended smack? Dude, your calls are so bad. You have no game, no discernible game whatsoever. Dude, you are horrible. Josh, I'll say it one last time. I appreciate that you like this show so much. You should. It's a really good show. Like the best show I've ever heard. But that doesn't mean you need to call the show, dude. Your smack is not good. It's not getting better. You're not making the show better. You're embarrassing yourself. You're mispronouncing Rory McIlroy's name. You're saying that we should all jump in the lake on your smack because it's so hot. And then you want your own song. You already have your own song. Josh, dude. Yeah, most people when they get negative feedback, like most people when bad things happen, like if you pick up a baseball bat and you play Little League Baseball for like 5 years, 7 years, and you never get a base hit, wouldn't that hurt your confidence? Wouldn't you know you suck? Wouldn't you know that you're not built for it? You're not made for it? Josh, you're like the guy that picked up a bat and played baseball for 7 years and never once made contact. Yet you are walking around like you're Mickey Mantle. I don't understand it. Are you slow? Are you not that bright? Or do you just have this like unbelievable confidence? Like this super, super ugly guy who walks into a bar and hits on the best-looking lady there. Like, yo, what's up? What's up? Come here often? What's your sign? You've probably heard of me. I'm Josh in Detroit. Like, I kind of almost respect it. I kind of almost admire it. Like, don't you have one guy in that group? There's one guy in every group. The guy's got no game whatsoever. He's got, like, this terrible look. Not even a very good rap. But that one guy that will go up to any lady in a bar and just start spitting game and dropping lines. And you look at it like you're embarrassed for the guy and you know it's going to be a train wreck, but part of you wants to be that guy. There's no part of me that wants to be you, Josh, but you keep coming into the bar and trying to pick up on the best looking lady at the bar when you're an ugly guy with no game. It's incredible. Honestly. And yet every time she throws the drink in your face and says, beat it, man. Get out of here. Dermatology recommended? What does that even mean? Dermatology recommended. Yeah, man, I picked Rory McIlroy.
Rory McIlroy.
Derek Morgan coming up top of the hour. What I want to do when I come back is I do want to talk about Baker Mayfield. I do want to talk about our podcast with Todd Furman. I do want to talk about a really bad guy. A bad guy. All of that still ahead. And unfortunately, probably some really bad calls. I will do my best to weed them out. I always am. Right now, I've got a bottom of the hour sports update. If you're waiting on that, you need a break from this. Here it is. Rich Ackerman's got it.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
I need to correct something I said. David Duvall did not shoot 90. David Duvall did not have a 13 on 7. David Duvall, in retrospect, had a 14. And because he had 14 and not 13, he finished with a 91 and not 90. And on top of that, he started with two birdies. And I'm not here to kill the guy. Again, I've always been a huge David Duvall fan. But my man was on 59 watch after two. And never mind a former world number one shooting 91. You know how hard that is to do? It's not like we're asking him to shoot his age either. He's not 91. But the only thing more difficult than shooting 91 is a former world number one is to shoot a 91 when starting the day with back-to-back birdies and finishing with a 91. That's amazing. He played the final 16 holes at plus 22. This weekend, Major League Fishing's General Tire World Championship continues. And then later, the action moves to the courts, highlighted by Big Three Basketball and World Team Tennis, all on CBS. Love it. All right, so another week, another compelling episode of the Jim Rome Podcast, fresh out of the audio oven. It's there for you to go and listen to after this program or even over the weekend or at the gym or during your commute. This week, my guest is sports gambling expert and media personality Todd Furman. Now, I know right away that the topic of sports gambling is going to elicit, you know, two kinds of responses. Either you're into it, you love the conversation, you can't get enough, you want that information, or it's just not your deal. You're not into it. You think it's too niche, or you think it's too complicated to figure out, or you think it's something you're never going to do, so there's no reason to bother with it. You're not going to learn anything about it because you're just not feeling it, and you never will. I understand that. It's not for everybody. But it's because I do get it and understand it and have an interest in it and know where the world is going, at least I think, that I decided to bring him on. There is a major sea change coming in how we think about how we talk about sports, how we watch sports. And that sea change is centered around gambling because the stigma of sports gambling being a dirty, underground, degenerate vice is fading quickly. States across the country are starting to legalize sports gambling. Broadcast companies are working in betting lines and over-unders into their telecasts. Hell, broadcast companies are developing entire gambling shows, not just working it in, but developing, producing shows about gambling. As an example, you know, as I make my way around town, I can't tell you how many producers or people in business that I speak to where the very first thing they ask me is, how do you feel about gambling? What do you know about gambling? It's a huge topic, and it absolutely will impact how many of us watch games, especially since it's going to impact how the games that you watch are produced, whether you're down or not. So back to Todd Furman, one of the more credible voices in the industry. He ran the sports book at Caesars Palace. He has been the lead gambling analyst at FS1 for the last half decade. So this is where he lives and what he does. Something he's been doing, actually, since he was 6 years old.
I was 6 years old when I started filling out my dad's office pools to try and get my feet wet in the industry. But, see, I was a much more advanced age, Jim, before I actually made a bet with a bookie. I was 12 years old trying to figure out how I could get a little action on Mountain West basketball late on a Monday night between Colorado State and New Mexico. Found a kid in junior high school that was more than happy to take my $10. It was one of two bets I ended up making that night. I think New Mexico was a three-point road favorite on the road in Fort Collins. And you know how this goes, Jim. Anybody who's been in this business, they call it beginner's luck for a reason. I went 2-0, thought, all right, this is going to be the start of a way to make a ton of money. It dwarfed the $4.25 an hour I was making at softball concession stands and thought, okay, this is where I'm going to find my calling. I'm going to be able to bet sports, and I'm going to have a lot more cash in my pocket. As anyone who's been in and around this business knows, though, you got to learn to take your lumps before you can win consistently. And that might have been the only winning night I put on the books that college basketball season.
Office pools at age 6, moneyline wagers at age 12, And while he may have taken some lumps, he never looked back. And now he knows the industry cold. He has seen it change. He has seen it become more mainstream over the past few years. And he told me that he thinks the broadcast companies continue to dive into the sports gambling world. And as that happens, people will become more and more comfortable with the idea of it as they become more exposed to it.
I don't get the feeling that there is, you know, a massive portion of the population that had always been itching to bet sports but was afraid to send their money to an offshore sports book or take advantage of a corner bookie or even fill out a parlay card that you'll see in sports bars across the country. So I think you'll see a little bit of that component, folks feeling more comfortable with it because they'll trust some of the markets. But I think what will really happen, and you look at the media landscape, as different companies get in there, whether it's Fox, whether it's ESPN, whether it's CBS, NBC, you name it, I think people are going to start to feel more comfortable with the terminology. They're going to realize that there isn't quite that same stigma attached to it, and there's nothing wrong with being able to risk your $11 to win 10 if you want to have added attachment to a Thursday night football game between two cellar dwellers.
All right, so that's something right there, isn't it? Right, you're willing to risk 11 bucks to make 10 bucks for, quote, an added attachment to a Thursday night football game between two cellar dwellers. He's right. I mean, you'd be surprised what 10 bucks does to your interest in a game that you otherwise would not have given a damn about. And that's part of why these leagues and broadcast companies have started to embrace gambling. Why do you think that Thursday night matchup is so critical? That Thursday night package is so important? It's the only game that night. People will get down. And once a viewer gets some skin in the game, they become glued to the product. Not everybody will try and get skin in the game, but once you do, it does change things. Because now it matters when it didn't matter before. And if you've ever played fantasy sports, you know the exact feeling. We also talked about how the future of gambling is mobile. And that once you can place legal wagers on your phone, you essentially have a sports book in your pocket 24/7.
It's definitely mobile. The most powerful devices any of us use in our day-to-day is the mobile phone. So when you have that there, you essentially have a sports book in the palm of your hand. And I've been blown away by a number of states that haven't introduced mobile bills. They're still working under the auspices that this is the 1970s and that everybody is going to drive into their local casino. They're going to park their car. They're going to take advantage of a buffet, and they're going to bet their 16 parlay over the counter. If states want to try and approve sports betting and you're not going to legalize mobile, don't waste anybody's time. I think you look at New Jersey and the way they've done it, the numbers that they're producing from a betting handle standpoint surpassing Nevada is directly tied to the very casual and laid-back approach they've taken to mobile. I think it's the smartest, most effective way to do it. And if you can allow people to deposit remotely after they've signed up for an account, it's going to open that Pandora's box.
Let me ask you something. Even if you're not into this, even if it's not something that you could ever see yourself doing outside of maybe the Super Bowl or the Final Four or the NCAA tournament, do you not find that content interesting? That, to me, is really interesting. Like, how many of you knew that New Jersey was doing bigger numbers than Nevada? Well, now you know, and it's because New Jersey has allowed mobile gambling. And like Todd said, that's the future of the industry. Not the brick and mortar, but the mobile. And instead of driving to the book, you'll be able to pull the book right out of your pocket whenever and wherever you want. Like in Jersey, for instance. So we spent a lot of time talking about the evolution of the business. We also talked about how to set a line. How Vegas goes about setting a line for the NFL, for instance. Where and how you can get an edge at the sports book. Why a regulated market will create more transparency with gambling. And how to manage a recreational bankroll. Like, everything you want to know about sports gambling is covered in this podcast. Well, maybe not everything, of course, but certainly enough to get started with and enough to think about. And I didn't have this conversation with him to sell you on the idea of getting down with your jack. I had the conversation with him because it's fascinating and it is an important conversation to have because change is coming and it's coming quickly. How many of you listening right now badly want to get on a plane and go to Vegas or drive to Vegas? Like everybody. And the podcast episode is littered with some really good information from a guy who knows pretty much something about everything. Even if he and I did disagree about this notion of America's team, the Cleveland Browns.
I didn't think you were going to be drinking the Kool-Aid like everybody else here, being a savvy bettor. But when you look at their odds to win the Super Bowl, their odds to win the division, and of course the AFC, this is a team that has a ton of talent. They have all the playmakers you want at receiver, at running back, on the defensive side. Baker Mayfield, the heir apparent at quarterback. But all the talk, the bluster, the bravado, what they're doing is effectively putting a target on their back and a franchise that hasn't experienced any success in a long, long time all of a sudden has to deal with the weight of the world and those expectations. I'm not sure they're going to be up for it when you have such a volatile mix in the locker room. Let's see how Odell and Baker Mayfield get along. Will that relationship start to fracture? What will it look like when Kareem Hunt finally gets a chance to suit up and get out there and play? I think the Browns are going to be a fascinating story and would make an excellent reality TV show. I'm just not sure they're going to get any of my money in the futures market.
Well, they got my money. I'm not worried about them at all. I love them. I'm not worried about any of that. They've got my money. And I didn't drink the Kool-Aid, my man. I made the Kool-Aid.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to the Browns, I am the Kool-Aid man.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really good episode. All right? That was just a couple of minutes. There is 40-plus minutes of that. Go listen to episode 89, the Jim Rome Podcast with Todd Furman. Trust me on this. You will learn a lot, and you'll be glad you did.
89.
1-800-636-8686. Phone lines are open. Next hour, newly retired 9-year NFL linebacker Derek Morgan. Let's check the leaderboard of the Open Championship. John Rahm is back on top at 5-under through 12. All right, I was one hole behind. He is one of my picks. Yeah, I know, put myself way out there with John Rahm. Brooks Koepka in the house with a minus 368. Tied for fourth. Another guy that I like, the LBC's finest, Patrick Cantlay. Tiger Woods in 141st place. 6-over.
I like that.
Tiger! Bro, why even go?
Tiger!
All right, we're coming back with our third and final hour. Last segment is Derek Morgan, so we're open between now and then. I do want to talk about the Browns. Let me make my argument once again for the Browns. I'll do that when we come back. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Third hour straight ahead.